Siempre un maple. Jack Campbell thought he had everything.
Merry Christmas.
I'm giving everything I've got to this deal.
You're a credit to capitalism, Jack.
Then one day, his past caught up to him.
Kate Reynolds. She was my girlfriend in college. I almost married her.
But instead, you left her.
I took the road less traveled.
And fate.
What?
Him?
Me.
Gave him a glimpse.
What do you need, Jack?
I got everything I need.
Yeah? You just remember that. You brought this on yourself.
At what his life could have been.
Kate?
Come on, Dad. Get up. It's Christmas. It's Christmas.
Jack.
Strong coffee.
Where's my Ferrari?
You got a Ferrari?
Just tell me what's happening to me.
This is a glimpse.
A glimpse of what?
This is not my beautiful house.
This is very strange because this isn't my house.
This is not my beautiful wife.
Those aren't my kids. Oh.
You're not really my dad, are you?
I don't have time for this. I'm in the middle of a deal.
Well, you're working on a new deal now, baby.
Good Lord. Do you know why I work here?
Because you're the best damn tire guy in the state of New Jersey.
You must have needed this every day.
Yeah, you need it in Mad Wheels.
You want me.
That is the general idea.
God, you're beautiful.
How can you look at me like you haven't seen me every day for the last 13 years?
Jack! What's up? How you feeling, baby?
Can't keep coming in and out of people's lives, messing things up. It's not right. I need you to remember me, Kay. Keep it with you no matter what happens.
Well, it's too late tonight to drag the past out into the night. One
Academy Award winner Nicolas Cage, The Family Man.
Hello and welcome to The Complete Works, an in-depth look into the career and filmography of Nicolas Cage. My name is Mike Smith, and joining me on this journey into the depths of true cagedom is my friend, co-host, and fellow cageaholic,
Mike DiCriscio.
How you doing today, Mike?
Good, good. We're braving the snowpocalypse of 2017 to bring you Nick Cage goodness.
Yes, we are both snowed in at our houses right now. It is quite a scene outside. I mean, it's not as bad near you, from what I understand. Although it's gotten very slushy.
Yeah, it's rainy, snowy, the drenched, wintry mix. Okay. So it's going to be super gross.
Yeah, right now mine is just snow, but it is a lot of it. I think we're supposed to get like 15 inches or something.
So
everybody should stay safe out there.
It's an excuse to finally have a discussion for next week for a film book cast.
There we go. By the time you listen to this, the snow should be over, so you can disregard our warnings, but
don't worry about it.
Anyway, that's not what we're here to talk about today, Mike. We're not here to talk about the snow. We could start a separate podcast about the snow, but that's not what we're doing. We're here to talk about Nicolas Cage, because that's what we do, Mike. It's the complete works. So we'll start that by going back in time, in the year 1946.
Okay. I'm with you so far.
Okay. In 1946, director Frank Capra, a man whose films are the pinnacle of American idealism, and who at the time was known for such films as It Happened One Night and Mr. Smith Goes to Washington, released what is today likely his best-known movie, It's a Wonderful Life.
Ah.
You see where I'm going with this now?
I see. Snow. Okay, I'm with you so far.
That's not what... That wasn't at all what I was going for. You got it. You're on in the ballpark, sure. the film was not a big hit upon its release, though it was nominated for a few Oscars. But as time went on, it began to build an audience and reputation by playing on television. People caught on to It's a Wonderful Life and basked in its true belief in the goodness of the human spirit. In the year 2000... director Brett Ratner, who was known at the time for directing Rush Hour with Jackie Chan and Chris Tucker, and who would go on to direct films such as Rush Hour 2, Rush Hour 3, and X-Men The Last Stand, helmed the film that takes the premise of It's a Wonderful Life, but changes a key detail. What if the protagonist was kind of a dick?
Right.
And that film would come to be known as The Family Man, and I realize that intro makes it sound like it's a bad movie. It's not, you know, I don't think it's a great movie, but it's one that I'm not even sure I would call that good a movie, but it's not a bad one, you know?
Yeah.
It was like oddly compelling.
Right. Yeah, I'm watching this movie, I go in expecting this is probably going to be not that great. I wasn't expecting a whole lot, and I found myself caring, sort of.
Yeah.
Like I was oddly invested in this. This might be the most middle of the road movie we've talked about on this podcast.
Yeah, I would say it's slightly above middle of the road. We've definitely had much worse movies.
Oh yeah, no, absolutely. I guess it's the most like okay, yeah.
Yeah, like I could be on board with this. The Family Man stars Nicolas Cage as Jack Campbell, a Wall Street big shot with a big apartment who sleeps with all kinds of cool ladies. Until one Christmas Eve, when after meeting a mysterious man played by Don Cheadle, he wakes up to discover the world has changed and he's now a domesticated family man, married to his college girlfriend and the father of two children. So it's a big change for this character, Mike. And The Family Man received mixed reviews upon release, much like we're talking about now, with a lot of praise going towards the performances, but criticism leveled at the film's plot and predictability. It did good business at the box office, though. On a budget of $60 million, the film made about $124 million and was something of a sleeper hit for families during that holiday season.
There you go.
Yeah, so that's neat. And the film was indeed directed by Brett Ratner, hot off his success with the original Rush Hour. His next film would be Rush Hour 2, in 2001, followed by the Hannibal Lecter film Red Dragon.
Wow.
Yeah, that's a pretty good movie, Red Dragon. I like that.
I do like that movie.
Yeah. His most recent effort as a director was 2014's Hercules, which starred The Rock. Now, Brett Ratner's a guy who, I don't hate as much as everybody else does. A lot of people really dislike Brett Ratner specifically for X-Men 3. I think that's the one that people point to and be like, X-Men 3 sucks. And I look at X-Men 3 and being like, it's an okay action movie. I feel like for most of Brett Ratner's movies, I don't think he's ever directed anything totally great. Red Dragon is probably his best movie, but I think he's a totally fine workman-like director. He's the guy you hire when you just want to get something shot.
Get a movie made.
Yeah, hire Brett Ratner. Hercules I never saw with The Rock, but I heard it wasn't bad. And it was better than the other Hercules movie that came out that year called The Legend of Hercules, if you remember that.
There
were two Hercules movies in 2014. One of them had The Rock. One of them had Kellan Lutz from the Twilight movies. And that one is supposed to be way worse. So
somehow I'm not surprised.
The Family Man was written by David Diamond and David Wiseman, a writing team that has gone on to write films such as Evolution with David Duchovny.
Wow.
Do you know Evolution, Mike?
That's like one of my favorite cult movies.
Really? Yeah. Okay, I've never seen Evolution. I threw that in here hoping that you would know it.
Holy shit. That was one of those movies that I used to rent from Blockbuster all the time.
Really? Okay.
Yes.
So is that a good movie or is this one that you used to watch all the time?
Oh, man. You know, I haven't seen it since I've been over 10, so...
All right, but this is from the writers of Evolution, so there's that.
Okay.
They also wrote Old Dogs with Robin Williams and John Travolta, and When in Rome with Kristen Bell. So not the hugest track record there, but apparently Evolution's pretty good.
At least they wrote Evolution.
And the film stars Nicolas Cage as Jack Campbell, and Taya Leone stars as his wife/girlfriend, Kate. Don Cheadle appears as the otherworldly Cash, subbing in for It's Wonderful Life's Clarence. Mackenzie Vega from The Good Wife makes her film debut here as the Campbells' precocious young daughter, Annie. She's about, 8 years old in this movie. And Jeremy Piven plays a supporting role as Cage's pal, Arnie, so that's kind of neat. And then there's a whole list of people. Lisa Thornhill from Veronica Mars plays Evelyn Thompson, while Saul Rubinek of the sci-fi series Warehouse 13 plays Alan Mintz. Joseph Summer plays Peter Lassiter, and Harv Presnell, who also appeared in Face Off, plays Cage's father-in-law, Big Ed. He was also in Fargo as well.
Right.
So that was cool. And then there's another Cage reunion here, too, as Mary Beth Hart, one of the nurses from Bringing Out the Dead, plays Cage's assistant Adele in this movie. Kate Walsh from Grey's Anatomy and Private Practice and Fargo Season 1, the TV series, plays Jeannie. She was the widowed wife, the wife of the guy who died in Fargo Season 1. She plays Jeannie, while Gianni Russo plays Nick. You may know him as Carlo from The Godfather or one of the characters in the Mystery Science Theater 3000 movie Laser Blast.
Wow.
That's beautiful. It's a bit of a deep cut, but I knew you would appreciate it.
I do.
Also, Joel McKinnon Miller, who plays Scully on Brooklyn Nine-Nine, portrays Tommy, so I was pretty excited to see him. And finally, I didn't catch his appearance, but apparently Robert Downey Sr. is credited as Man in House in this movie. What? I don't – I don't know which man, and I don't know which house, but he is.
Yeah, there's a lot of houses in this one,
and there's a lot of men. And there is at least one family man.
Hey, maybe it's the guy at the very end when he wakes up in the modern times again, and he goes to their old address.
Oh, you know,
like,
what?
Some like an old guy answers the door.
You know what? It probably is.
That must be.
That is probably it. I'm a little upset that I didn't pick up on that, but yeah, you're right. Yeah, you're probably right. And the IMDb plot synopsis for The Family Man reads: a fast lane investment broker offered the opportunity to see how the other half lives, wakes up to find that his sports car and girlfriend have become a minivan and wife.
Ooh,
crisscross.
I don't think that's what the phrase "how the other half lives" means. But...
Yeah, because he didn't want the opportunity to see how the other half lives.
So right.
He just gets thrown into there. So I feel like that's misleading on IMDb's part. But anyway, Mike, what are your overall thoughts on The Family Man?
I think we kind of gave him a little bit already, but I went in with low expectations and I came out pleasantly surprised, I guess.
Yeah.
Like I said, I found myself oddly invested in Nick Cage's journey. Through this life that he never had, this opportunity for him to see what it's like to be a dad and to see him grow as a person, as a character.
Sure.
And I think what you had mentioned earlier, where the performances were praised and the film overall is kind of criticized, and I feel pretty similar to that. I think that Tay Leone and Nick Cage and Don Cheadle, I think, is the best character in the movie.
Yeah, Don Cheadle's really, like, doing an interesting performance here. He's kind of like, yeah. I feel like... Like, I like Don Cheadle a lot, but I feel like in the later half of his career, he's been a lot more, like, stoic almost. Like, I feel like he doesn't let loose anymore. And it's not like, you know, in the Ocean's movies, he has, like, that British accent and he's, like, doing
right.
things. And I feel like this is closer to, like, what he was doing in Ocean's 11 than what he does as, like, in Hotel Rwanda or something. That's just to throw out an example.
Wow. Yeah. But absolutely, though. He's kind of being silly and over the top, and it's a lot of fun. But overall, the movie is just kind of okay. It's a decent enough Christmas movie. It's like that. It fits that genre.
Yeah, and I agree with that. I mean, I thought it was kind of like nice, you know.
Yeah.
So that made me feel good. I was pretty resistant towards it at first when it started. You know, it starts off with this scene with Cage and Leone in the airport in 1987, and Cage is like leaving for London for a year, and she's like, "Oh no, you should stay. We can make this work and stuff like that." And he's like, "Don't worry, we'll be fine. We'll pick up where we left off and all that kind of stuff." And that whole scene was like the most exposition-y scene I've ever seen.
I know, absolutely.
It was like the dialogue of the movie was, and that scene was so clunky. Cage was talking like, you know, you're starting your career at your law firm, and I'm starting my big high-profile thing at the, just so everybody's like caught up.
Yeah,
about what's going on. But I think the movie overall is like charming enough to pull through that kind of issues. And I have other issues with certain aspects of this movie. And I think the ending should have been changed entirely. And we'll talk about that in a little bit because it does not work on any level. And it kind of left me very uncomfortable. But what does help is that Nicolas Cage and Tay Leone are really great in this movie. And they seem very comfortable together. Like they seem like they could conceivably be a couple. Also, this movie is a lot funnier than I thought it was going to be, which helps. I think the dialogue is pretty like maybe not like witty, but it's like it's reliably funny, and there's like turns of phrase that are funny, and like Cage is doing like a lot of weird stuff in this movie which I was surprised by too.
I think charming is the perfect word to describe this movie.
Yeah.
That's kind of exactly how I felt.
Yeah, it's like okay, I can get on board with this. I'm happy with these two people and their relationship. What did you think of Nicolas Cage in this movie, Mike?
I think that the first half or so is fun. Okay, maybe not the first half. The businessman Cage part when he's the Wall Street hotshot. It's like, okay,
it's sure. It's probably like the first like 20 minutes or so.
Yeah, so the first 20 minutes Cage, when he's doing the hotshot business guy, it's okay. It's enough. It's nothing special going on. But once we wake up in the family man part and Cage gets to be the man out of time and he has no idea where he is or who he is or what's going on, we get to watch Cage do his Cage thing. Where he's like blinking really hard and he's yelling at people and like he doesn't understand what's going on and he looks lost, and it's fun, and that part is pretty silly, and it's good. It's a good, it's a good performance from Cage doing the Cage thing.
Absolutely, yeah. I think Cage is very good in this movie. He taps into every aspect of his character pretty well. I believe his transformation as the movie goes on. You know, I believed he was an arrogant, like, workaholic. I believed how he would react to any situation he was in throughout this movie. I less believed how everyone else reacted to Nicolas Cage throughout this movie. Because if I met this person and he was doing the things he does, I would assume he is a crazy person. Like, yeah, I would assume absolutely. I would assume he is insane. There are lots of moments where he gets to do his shout at the end of the sentence Cage stuff.
You know,
especially when he first arrives, you know, he's like showing up at this at the building that he used to live in, and he's like trying to talk to the doorman and the woman who he flirts with on the elevator sometimes, right. And he's like talking to them, and he's like, "What is this? Some kind of Christmas joke?" and he's yelling at the woman and describing their like banter. He's like, "We exchange quasi sexual banter every morning on the elevator and stuff like that." And then he gets picked up in the car by Don Cheadle, and he's yelling at Don Cheadle. He's like, "I'm in this permanent acid trip. You're sending me out with this mumbo jumbo."
That was the point where I wrote the note down that we get to watch Cage do the Cage thing.
Yeah,
and when he's in the car with Don Cheadle.
And I was pleasantly surprised by that, you know, because I didn't think this movie would allow him to go as cagey as he could with it. And it's not like full Cage, like it's not like, you know, Vampire's Kiss. It's not Deadfall, but it's like,
right.
You know, he's definitely putting his own personality and his own kind of vocal tics into this performance, which I enjoyed very much. Now, how do you think this role fits in with the roles that we've seen Cage play so far, Mike?
I think this is – we're back to leading hunk Cage, which I don't think we've had for a couple movies.
Yeah. I mean, we had City of Angels.
That's right? True, yeah. But it's kind of middle-of-the-road Cage, it seems. It's like the movie as a whole.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, the romance part and the sentiment gave me a very strong "It Could Happen to You" vibe, just like this overall pervading sense of niceness that is surrounding this. And it's, I don't think it's as strong as "It Could Happen to You," because "It Could Happen to You" is just about nice people doing nice things, and that's like it.
Right.
And The Family Man is about this guy who's kind of an asshole learning to be nice, and so it's more like Trapped in Paradise in that way. And also, it's a Christmas movie like Trapped in Paradise. So there's
now, yeah. There's I was trying to remember the name of that movie, and I was like, the bank robber one.
the one where Dana Carvey's just talking in a weird voice for the entire time. Yeah.
Also
in same vein as "It Could Happen to You," this movie also features a mystical black angel character.
Yeah.
In that movie, it's Isaac Hayes, and this movie is Don Cheadle. So there's that. Also, there's an actual reference to Honeymoon in Vegas in the dialogue of this movie. I don't know if you caught that, Mike.
I don't think I did.
No. There's the scene where Nicolas Cage is bowling with his like new friends, and he's like, and he kind of sucks at bowling. And he's like talking to himself. He's talking to himself at the ball, and he's like, "Come on, you can do this. You did this. You've swam with the sharks and all this. You can do this." And then he says, "You jumped out of an airplane over the Mojave Desert."
That's amazing. So, I did not catch that.
So that was a nice little reference. So that means I'm assuming that this takes place in the same universe as Honeymoon in Vegas.
It must be. That relationship didn't work out.
Yeah, that relationship didn't work out. He ends up back with his college girlfriend, and everyone's much happier, I assume. Maybe Sarah Jessica Parker ended up with James Caan.
Maybe it all worked out.
Maybe it all worked out in the end. Anyway, so were there any scenes or moments in this movie that stood out to you, Mike? Anything that you wanted to discuss?
I did particularly enjoy the scene when Cage is working at the tire shop, working at Big Ed's Tires, and his old boss comes in to get his tire fixed from his fast lane life.
Right.
And he tries to sweet talk his way into the job. And then he gets that job interview. I just thought that was part of the kind of, like you said, it's not witty, the dialogue or anything in particular, but it's just funny. Like when he rattles off all those facts about his old bosses, even though in this timeline they don't know him, and it comes off as super stalkery.
I also enjoyed that scene because it made me think that Cage turned into the guy from Psych for a second, where he was just rattling things off.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is, yeah.
So that was pretty funny. But I did want to talk about the ending of this movie, which comes off as very, like, nice and sentimental and romantic. That's how the movie, like, plays it. But I think it's very misguided and terrible for a number of reasons. So in the ending of this movie, Cage wakes up back in his own reality on Christmas Day. Like, he has left the alternate reality behind, and he has spent the entire movie becoming acclimated to this alternate reality, and he's bonded with the kids, and he's fallen back in love with Kate, and he's, you know, become a better person, it seems like. Right. So Cage wakes up back in his own reality on Christmas Day and discovers that Kate also focused on her career as well, and that she is moving to Paris. And so he runs to the airport to stop her and gives her this big speech. And in the speech, he describes their alternate life together with kids and the house and everything. And that gets her to skip her flight and have a cup of coffee with him. And then the movie ends.
Right.
What? like any normal person hearing the speech that Cage gives, especially the way Cage delivers it, which is coming off as somewhat unhinged. And, you know, this is a person, for some context, Cage is a person who she has not seen in like 13 years.
Yeah.
Right.
It's been a very long time.
You know, she saw him earlier that day when he showed up at her house. And she like had called him. He thought she had called him just to reconnect. She was actually just calling him to give him a box of his stuff. Which, like, why would she still have that stuff? It's 13 years later. Like,
right.
I don't think he cares about any of that. But anyway, she does that for some reason. And he gets the stuff, and then he goes back to his own apartment, and then he decides not to give up, runs to the airport, and she's like, do you want, like, closure or something? Like, what is it? Like, it's been 13 years. Like, I've moved on. You should move on, too. And, like, which is a rational thing to say. And then Cage gives the whole speech, and then she's like, okay, let's go get a cup of coffee. I'm like, what?
Yeah. The speech is so incredibly weird because it's like, she's our daughter. She's precocious. But it's really just because she's smart. And then he like lists all the very specific details about their life as if they're real. And she's like, yeah. And she's just in for it.
It is so bizarre. Like any normal person would hear that speech and assume they are dealing with like a fucking psycho.
Yeah. I had assumed that the only way that this speech, while the speech is happening, I was like, oh shit, it's gonna turn out that she also saw this alternate life, and of course now she's got all these emotions, and now it's gonna happen. But then it's just, it turns out that no, like, she's just a regular human, and he's telling her, and he's the only one that saw all these things.
Yeah, but they're also surrounded by other people who are who have to be listening to this. Like, there's no way they can not hear what's going on, and they also have to be, like, wondering, like, what is happening? You can't just make up a daughter. and not to mention the alternate reality that Cage has spent the entire movie in is dead forever.
It doesn't exist. It doesn't happen.
It doesn't exist. They can't just start from the beginning, since even if they end up getting together in this new reality, too many things have changed. Like, it's the year 2000 now. It's not 1987. And they will never have that house. You know, he goes to the house, and there's people living there. Robert Downey Sr., presumably, is living in that house. And they will never have those same friends. And they will definitely not have those kids. You know, even if they get together and start, like, a family or something, it won't be the same kids. Right? Like, it's just not going to work like that. And I think that's the biggest thing that bugs me, is that those two kids are just gone. they just don't exist. You know?
Imagine never being able to live up to your parents' imaginary children.
Exactly. Cage spends the entire movie building a relationship with these kids, and you kind of feel for these kids. The daughter character knows that something is up. She like understands that Cage is not where he's supposed to be, and she thinks her dad has left or he's disappeared or something. And this is like some kind of imposter who will be here for a little bit until her dad comes back. But the gradual bond between them is like part of the core of this movie.
Yeah, that moment when they're playing outside, I think in the snow, I don't remember exactly.
Yeah.
And he falls down and she jumps on him and is like, oh, I knew you'd come back, Dad.
Yeah.
It's heartfelt. It's real.
It's super emotional, and she's just gone. This movie erases her entire existence, and it doesn't seem like Cage cares that much.
Yeah, even this glimmer of hope is still shadowed by the Snyderverse.
These kids are just swept under the rug. We're not supposed to think about them. It's pretty fucked up. But you think about it. Like, I feel like there are so many better routes, like, to go with this kind of movie. You can have an ending where the two realities merge. That might have made more sense, where, like, he has the family, but he's also the a lower level executive at the job or something. Or else there's the alternate or else maybe the alternate reality becomes the new reality or something like that. Like, I feel like to have it this way and erase those kids out of existence just seems really cruel to me.
Yeah, that's where I thought this was going. So we get that moment where I think that moment where Annie says, like, oh, I knew you'd be back, Dad, and he accepts his life as the father and all this stuff. And I was like, okay, it's going to wrap up, and it's going to be that this is the new – this is the life for him now.
Yeah. He has that scene where he meets Don Cheadle again, and Don Cheadle's right. like, oh, I guess you've learned your lesson. And Cage is like, no, don't send me back. Don't send me back, and all that kind of stuff. And so you assume he won't get sent back. Right.
Right. And I thought – but exactly. And at that point, he had fully embraced this alternate timeline life. And I thought the movie was going to end, and I was like, all right, cool. And then I looked, and there was still, like, another half hour left.
Yeah.
I was very confused. But then and then we get this whole weird thing at the end here that we're talking about.
Yeah, absolutely. And I feel like – I mean, we've talked about the ending a lot. And I feel like I guess the moral of this movie is that, you know, family should come first and all that stuff. And I get that. I get that sentiment, right?
But
at the same time, I feel like it's also kind of saying you're not happy unless you are with some kind of family or you have this kind of person in your life. And I feel like that's a little mean to people who don't have that kind of their life. You know, I feel like that's a very broad statement. And like, you know, some people don't want a family. Some people don't want these kind of things.
Right.
You were saying somebody on Game Over Greggy was mentioning the Family Man, the Game Over Greggy show. And he was saying, like, I would rather have the life that Nicolas Cage had in the first half hour of this movie.
Yeah, he specifically mentions that he doesn't want the Taya Leone timeline. Yeah. He wants the businessman timeline. So it is a weird thing a weird statement for the movie to make.
Yeah, because
it's the Hollywood movie, so sure.
That's true. But even like before he goes into this alternate reality, like Cage seems pretty happy, like living his life. And Taya Leone seems pretty happy in the real timeline too. Like when Cage sees her and she's like this high-powered lawyer and she's moving to Paris and stuff like that. Like, she seems like she's having a blast.
Yeah, she's moving on up.
Yeah, there's different kinds of happiness, sure. And, like, that's part of what – maybe that's what this movie's trying to get at. But it seems like this movie's, like, really focused on, like, no, you're not happy unless you're in this loving relationship.
Right.
And you have these two kids which don't exist anymore. So true happiness can never exist for these two.
Yeah. I do want to mention – I just forgot – earlier that opening credits opera singing dance in his underwear, beautiful.
Yes, that's true. And this movie actually has a couple of scenes of Cage singing, and we haven't seen that in a little while, but I did want to mention the opera dance in his underwear, because A, it's beautiful, it's great, but also that song has been used in a couple of other Nicolas Cage movies that we've discussed, and I just kind of noticed that this time around. It was used in Honeymoon in Vegas and in Guarding Tess.
That's right, so, yeah.
La Donna e Mobile is the name of that song. I probably mispronounced that, but that is...
close enough.
Yeah, but there's also an emotional moment in the movie in which Cage watches an old videotape of Kate's birthday, where he sings to her La La Means I Love You by the Delphonics, which is fun, so that's enjoyable. And like, you see like Jeremy Piven does like a backup thing in there too, and like Joel McKinnon does like a backup thing. It's like it's entertaining, it's funny.
I'm pretty sure Jeremy Piven has only ever played one character, and he's great at it.
Yeah, well, I've never is this like similar to his Entourage character, because I've never seen Entourage.
I guess I don't know.
Fair enough.
It's the same type of dude.
Just I'm curious what you mean by that. What do you describe him in detail?
The very sarcastic, very silly, like in your face, slapping you on the back kind of best friend guy.
Okay, yeah, I can see that.
He does that. I mean, that's not, I think, from what I have seen of Entourage, it's very not, I guess it's not that, but
but he does play that character a lot. Yeah, I know what you're saying. I also wanted to mention a very odd scene, which I thought was weird anyway. It's a scene where Cage and Leone are like, they're at their house, and Cage wants a piece of chocolate cake in the fridge. And she's already eating it. And they chase each other around with this chocolate cake. And it's like a funny, like, you know, kind of romantic, like, you know, a funny moment. And then they're on the staircase. And they're both covered in chocolate cake. And then they start making out. And I think they're about to have sex.
Yeah.
Covered in cake on the staircase.
Yes.
And that, to me, it just seemed like a very uncomfortable place to do, to do it. I feel like there are so many alternative routes.
Yeah. You
know, even if it was just like on the floor, that would be fine. But if this is on the staircase.
On the stairs.
And it's not even like it's a carpeted staircase. So that took me out of the movie for a second, because I was like, that can't be comfortable for anybody involved in this.
I do like that moment, though, as a benchmark for where Cage is as in his transition from hot businessman. Because she says like, oh, you know what I want you to say. Like, what, I don't remember the exact words, but he says something like, oh, you're so hot, you got me so hot, or some shit. It says something really weird.
Yeah. And she does not like it, and she leaves.
Yeah.
I did want to say, like, a lot of this movie, I would say probably, like, the majority of this movie is just, like, a collection of scenes of Cage doing something dumb, Leone getting mad at him, and then forgetting about it in the next scene.
Yes. Yeah.
That's what it seemed like after a while. Like, it's just like, oh, he's says this dumb thing, she gets mad, and then the next scene, they're just back to normal. And then the same thing happens, back to normal the next scene, and keeps going on.
Yeah, that was very apparent when they're at the mall, I think, and he wants to buy the $2,400 suit.
Yes.
And they have this very big fight, and he says something along the lines of, like, I need this in my life. Like, he almost explains that he's from a different timeline. I don't remember the exact wording, but
he
says something along those lines.
Yeah.
And then they were in the van on the way home, and, like, everything's fine. And then they're having this very lovely discussion. Doesn't make any sense.
Exactly. It's very weird. But at the same time, like, Cage and Leone really pull it off. Like, they are very good in the roles, and I feel like that's what sells most of this movie for me. I also wanted to mention Cage's – the actual running that Cage does to the airport, because it is hilarious. It's what's great about it is, like, it's so isolated from everything else that's around him. Like, he's, like, in the airport, and there's people there. But Cage, there's, like, a wide open space where Cage is just running in a straight line towards the camera, and he's, like, lifting his arms, like, back and forth, like he's a Terminator or something.
It's super weird.
It is super weird. I also wanted to mention the flirtatious thing that Cage had with that one woman. Never really paid off in any significant way. There's a bit, like, at the bowling alley where Cage is like, hey, are we what's going on between us? Like, what's going on? And it's, like, this really, like, big thing for her. It's like, are we finally being honest about this? And he's just, like, very casual, like, oh, it would help me. Yeah. That would be helpful. And she's like, yeah, I want this to be a thing. And, like, my husband and kids are going to be away this weekend, like, come over. And so Cage, like, talks to Jeremy Piven, and he's like, so what's, like, her exact address? Like, so I can do this. And Piven, like, freaks out and leaves. And then, like, nothing ever happens after that. And maybe it's just because Cage never got her address. I don't know.
I don't know. Jeremy Piven held all the power of that.
But that was very, like, there. I felt like there should be at least, like, one more scene in that subplot for that to be something that was substantial.
Yeah, especially because I don't remember exactly the timeline of when that's happening, because I thought it was as he's accepting this new life, and then he's, like, setting up this affair. So, like, it didn't really gel with what else was going on.
Yeah, I think that was right before the birthday cake scene, actually, because, like, I think that's when he comes home and, like, she asks, like, oh, how was bowling? And he was like, oh, you know, it was lame and stupid, but it seems like Jeremy Piven liked it, so... I also did, like, Cage's bowling thing where he gets, like, 6 pins or something, and he shouts, "Victorious!"
Yeah, and he high-fives everyone, and they're all just staring at him.
Yeah.
But, like, that's what we were saying. Like, it's not the funniest words. The script isn't hilarious, but, like, there's funny stuff going on.
Yeah, it's a pretty, like, solidly entertaining thing. I did want to mention also this. When Cage first meets Don Cheadle, you know, he does the whole thing with the lottery ticket, and then they go out on the street. And they have that scene where they're talking to each other, and there's a very prominent light pattern behind them in the shape of a cross. I don't know if you caught that.
I don't think I noticed that, no.
The building behind them, the lights are on in that building, but only the lights that are on to make a cross. Yeah,
that's hilarious.
And I was like, oh, I wonder if this is an Angel character.
We're not sure.
But yeah, I mean, the movie has its problems, but it really did, like, win me over in the end, mostly just because of Cage and Leone, I think. It's pretty charming, it's pretty enjoyable, surprisingly funny. I just really wish the ending was different, you know?
Yeah, it was less horrifying.
Yeah, it was less terrifying for all involved. So is there any other scenes in this movie that you wanted to talk about, Mike, before we move on to Netflix reviews?
No, I think we covered pretty much everything. Let's see what other people have to say.
Let's see what other people have to say in Netflix reviews for The Family Man. Here is a 5-star review of The Family Man from Netflix. The best Nicolas Cage movie ever. Yeah, I know people like Gone in 60 Seconds, but this was a real gem.
Wow. That's amazing.
Like, that's the hill you're going to die on. Like, yeah. Yeah, I know people like Gone in 60 Seconds. That's obviously his biggest work, but... here's a 4-star review of The Family Man. This is a fabulously funny movie, and I can only beg the producer who did not cut the Prince Charming prostitute scene to get help. At best, The compulsion to force women to watch such scenes borders on misogyny. The worst case is that it indicates the inability to form meaningful relationships with women. With the proper support network, you can become a happy, decent human being. Please get help. Everyone deserves better, including the prostitutes and you. I get the irony of the name Family Man, but most of the people who are attracted to this title are looking for a film about a family man, not someone who once had the potential to be a family man.
Whoa, shots fired.
I guess. I mean, I'm racking my brain. I cannot think of a single prostitute scene in the Family Man.
Do they perhaps mean the woman that leaves on Christmas Eve in the morning?
I thought that was just a person. Like, I thought that was just a girl. I thought that was I think that was just the girl that he was sleeping with occasionally, and she's the one who shows up at the end, too.
Right. I thought that it was going to be a prostitute. Like, I thought there was going to be a moment where she, like, takes money off the counter or something, but that never happens. She just is like, okay, I'll see you tomorrow, and then leaves.
Yeah. And it seems like they have, like, a rapport, and, like, it seems like they have some kind of relationship going. And
yeah.
So I genuinely don't know what this guy's what this person is talking about. Super weird. but at least they're concerned for the producer of this movie, whoever he or she may be.
Yeah.
So there's that as well. Here's a 5-star. What were you going to say?
I was just saying, it comes from a place of goodness, but that's all.
Exactly. Much like most of the Family Man. Here's a 5-star review of the Family Man. Male, age 51, one of my favorite movies of all time. I know there are going to be many of you who say, what, an older male likes this movie? I watch it every time it comes on TV. In fact, I am watching it now. It is a very well acted by all, and the plot has been used, but it has newer twists in it. There are some very amusing scenes in it, especially the one where Nicholas changes the boy's duty diaper for the first time.
That scene was pretty funny. I forgot about that.
That was a pretty funny scene. I feel like this guy is really insecure about liking this movie, it seems.
Yeah, just like what you want to like, man. It's fine.
It's fine, man. Don't worry about it. I mean, if you like, if Nicolas Cage changing a poopy diaper warrants favorite movie of all time status, then good for you, man.
Live your life.
Here's a 1-star review of The Family Man. Didn't like the fact that it was supposed to be PG-13 and it shows nudity. I would not say that it is okay for children. I thought the movie What If was much better and it had the same principle behind it. So again, there's not really nudity in this movie. There is partial nudity, I would say. There's a scene at the beginning where you see the woman strapping up her dress from the back, and there's also a scene where Tia Leone is dancing in the shower, but that's obscured by the shower door.
Yeah.
So I guess like partial nudity is not even enough. It's that's too much. Not it's too okay. Much. Yeah.
It says family right in the name, Mike.
That's true. That's true. Here's a 1-star review of The Family Man, and this one is really great. This is a really good one. The director pits the stereotypical greedy corporate capitalist man versus the androgynous Mr. Mom family guy, and you can guess who wins. With this story, there is absolutely no middle ground, and by going to the extremes, the director makes this almost a castration of the powerful cutthroat corporate tycoon. Yes, Jack is a self-serving jerk that is having so much fun doing so, he forgets about what it's like to have a moral center where the lure of love isn't just a pickup line to get a woman into bed. With that being said, Jack is very talented at persuading people and is a born salesman who is meant for better things than working at the in-laws dealership. But his entire parallel life revolves around his wife and the kids, with nothing in it for him except just coexisting with his college sweetheart. Yeah, his real life is a bit empty, but he loves every minute of it. Until he showed a grass is greener life. However, almost any man that has an ounce of testosterone in his body would choose the former high life of money, Jesus. Power, fast cars, and being with drop-dead gorgeous women. If I didn't know better, I would have sworn this movie was written by an anti-capitalist, man-hating woman.
That person definitely voted for Trump. Fuck that person. Yeah.
Nope, just Brett Ratner. With every ounce of testosterone in my body, I found this movie excruciating to watch and felt like I needed to watch a day's worth of football just to get back into balance.
Oh my god. Okay, all right, now I know it's a joke. That's gotta be a joke.
I don't know, man. That's this gives a really long review. I feel like this guy was really angry.
Yeah, they were definitely very insecure about where they are in their life, but that's okay.
Yeah, but anyway, here's the last one, and this is a visit from our old friend. Here's a 2-star review of The Family Man. The theme behind this movie where monetary and family values are in competition is fantastic. However, was the profanity and sexual implications really necessary? I cannot recommend this movie to anyone based on that alone. This could be an excellent learning tool for our younger generation, if only it was cleaned up.
Oh my god. It's our old friend, Virgin Ears.
That's a good name. I like that, Virgin Ears. Alright, so that about wraps up our review with Family Man, Mike. I think we both came away from it kind of enjoying it. Like, it's solid.
Yeah, yeah. It's a nice enough movie.
Yeah, that's the perfect way to describe it. It is nice enough. Mike. Yeah. So where can we find you online this week, Mike?
You can find me at twitter.com/mdfilmblog. And if you like Dungeons & Dragons, my friends and I post our games at youtube.com/geonerd79.
And you can find me online at twitter.com/msmithfilmblog and all my podcasts and stuff at filmbook.com. Plus, I've got some work at crookedscoreboard.com, which you can check out. I just posted an article about the 30th anniversaries of Raising Arizona and Evil Dead 2, which I'm very happy with. So, guys, check that out.
It was a great article.
Well, thanks, Mike. Anyway, thank you guys so much for listening to The Complete Works. I'm Mike Smith. That is Mike's Cree Show. If you are listening to this review via our podcast on iTunes, please subscribe to the podcast, rate it, and take a moment to give us a review. You can support this podcast and Film Book taking part in our Patreon campaign. You can find our Patreon campaign page at patreon.com/filmbook. And, you know, feedback, compliments, topic discussions, and even hate mail can be sent directly to podcast@filmbook.com. Please list the podcast you are emailing about in the title of your email, because we produce just so many different ones, hard to keep track. We would love to hear from you. Join us in 2 weeks for another episode of Complete Works, in which we'll be talking about Nicolas Cage's role in director John Madden's Captain Corelli's Mandolin. So.
Yeah, it's going to happen, I guess.
Yeah, that's an exciting one. That's John Madden was the guy who directed Shakespeare in Love. This was his follow-up movie to Shakespeare in Love, actually.
Oh, okay.
So that'll be interesting to check out. Plus, you can keep an eye out for Film Bookcast, where I think we're a little more excited for this one. We'll be discussing Kong Skull Island.
Yeah, I think this is going to be a bonkers, silly action movie, and I'm excited.
Yeah, I'm pretty stoked with that. I've heard very good things. So thank you guys so much for listening, and thanks for getting in the cage.
Yeah, no. You hit it, Bill. You wore that shirt last year, by the way, just so you know.
Many guys have come to you with a line that wasn't true.
Oh.
Pass them by.
Pass them by.
Now you're in the center ring. And their lines don't mean a thing. Why don't you let me try?
Let me try.
Now I don't wear a diamond ring. I don't even have a song to sing. All I know is la 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 means I love you. La 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 means I love you. The things I am saying are true, and the way I explain them to you.
Get down. Oh, yeah.